Hello and welcome to MEC Connect. This is Matthew Yaling. I'm joined today with Patty Reinecke and Tina DeAndre. We're going to speak about post-traumatic stress syndrome. Patty?
Welcome, Tina. We're very glad to have you this morning. So we've been talking about the migratory side of claims, and we do see some diagnoses that are kind of unique. So we're happy to have you here to share your experience with post-traumatic stress syndrome and teach us about some things you've learned through the years. Welcome.
Thank you, Patty. I'm one of the medical management consultants here at Midwest Employees Casualty. I've been with the company for 5 years. Being a medical management consultant, I'm also a registered nurse, a certified case manager, and certified to do Medicare set-asides, and I have been working in the work comp industry for over 25 years.
You actually admit how long you've been here.
Yes, ma'am. Proud of that.
She started when she was 12.
Exactly.
Well, thanks again for joining us today, and we'll jump right in. Why don't you tell us what post-traumatic stress syndrome is, and what are some of the common symptoms?
Okay. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, as I'll probably refer to it most often, is a chronic disabling disorder that people develop after they are exposed to some kind of traumatic event involving actual or perceived threatening of their life, serious injury, or a sexual assault. In work comp, we see this more often than not with people who work more with the public, whether it be your firefighters, your police officers, your medical personnel, and unfortunately now more with your teachers as well. Some of the common symptoms associated with PTSD are intrusive thoughts, where you keep having things pop into your head at random times where it just brings the event back to you, nightmares, flashbacks, avoidance of the traumatic events. So like if for a teacher, for example, avoids the school or the field or wherever it happened, hypervigilance, where people are very sensory sensitive and react extreme to any kind of stimuli, and sleep disturbance, which pertains to causing a lot more symptoms because when you're tired, you're not thinking clearly.
Yeah, thank you. Can you kind of talk about some of the types of claims and really the people that we're seeing dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder in your role?
Yeah, like I said, it's mostly your first responders. Like I said, the police officer who was involved in like a shooting or an accident, or who arrives at the scene of a horrific crime or incident. Your firefighters from going to the fires, pulling people out. Teachers, unfortunately, we're seeing more of with the way of the world and the school shootings. They're being exposed to this. Even if it's not at their school, they had a student who was involved at another school. And, you know, just anybody, healthcare professionals who, unfortunately, patients who are violent. We've had shootings at hospitals, things like that. Those are the type of people, the ones who really have the most interaction with the public or where we see the most claims.
And I would imagine with the diagnosis of PTSD, it's a difficult diagnosis to make. And are there particular tests or things that you see that lead a clinician or the doctor to diagnosing post-traumatic stress?
Yeah, we see two more often than not. The gold standard for PTSD is the CAPS-5 test. It's a 30-question test that is administered by a clinician who is trained and deals with PTSD. The test usually takes 45 to 60 minutes to administer. And they then, based on the answers the injured worker gives them, they give a severity rating from 1 to 5. 1's like mild to no PTSD. 2 is moderate. 3 is severe. And then 4 is extreme. We also have the PTSD checklist that we see with most clinicians, which is given to the patient, and it's 20 questions, and they answer it on their own. It's a written test. It's not obviously as good as the CAPS, but we do see most of them do hand in hand, the two tests.
So it sounds like they're looking through a lot of information, kind of the symptoms that you talked about a little bit and the testing to correlate those symptoms to, I'm guessing, to separate the post-traumatic stress disorder from other kind of psychological.
Correct. Because they want to make sure they have the correct diagnosis. They don't want to misdiagnose and have like a depression or anxiety and diagnose it for post-traumatic stress because the treatment is different.
Right. So, okay. That totally makes sense because obviously you have to get the diagnosis correct. And it sounds from what you're saying that post-traumatic stress disorder is a little bit different than the more common psychological illnesses we see like depression and anxiety. Can you talk a little bit about the treatments that you mentioned and what kind of claims we see?
Psychotherapy, specifically cognitive behavioral therapy, is pretty much the basic treatment for that. We also see a lot of group therapy where people can get together. You want to have like groups probably around 15 people so they can talk and relate to each other, tell what they're going through, what's helped them, how things are working for them. We also see some doctors who recommend stuff like yoga, acupuncture, things like that to help them relax and everything. And finally, if needed, there are medications that are used to help treat this. The key with post-traumatic stress disorder is early intervention. You want to get in there and start treatment early so you can help mitigate the symptoms and the development of the symptoms.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. And I think one of the things I often hear in workers' comp is we don't want to add the psych component to this claim. So, you know, we talked about, you know, the first responders or the teacher, or, you know, people involved in a traumatic event or traumatic experience. What's the normal period where you'd want to be pretty aggressive on addressing that if you were consulting on a file or talking with one of our employers about a claim?
I think the situation helps you know it's a serious situation, like they were shot, or there was, like I said, the teacher involved in a school shooting, or a major fire where multiple coworkers were involved, and people start talking early about, you know, they're having nightmares, they're not feeling safe. You want to get involved early. It may not turn out that they have PTSD. It may be something as anxiety or depression or whatever, but you do want to get and start treatment early. I think everyone would agree the severer the situation, they know the higher the risk of the psych component. No, we don't want to get into a psych component unnecessarily where the guy fell down the stairs, for example, and now has a backache. That is one you wouldn't want to, you know, jump in and say, hey, he could, you know, have a psych component. However, if you're shot or you've seen someone being shot or injured or you were assaulted by someone you work with or someone visiting or something, you have a more likely than not chance of developing some kind of component where if you get early intervention, the treatment time should be less than if you wait and try and jump in 6 months down the road.
And I imagine with any kind of psychological injury or illness, when it is involved in the workers' compensation side, it's hard because you can't see something heal the way you can a broken bone or some other kind of injury. I think you mentioned the cognitive behavioral therapy, the group therapy. You know, part of the management side of it all is the stories that you hear anecdotally. They started treating for their work comp injury and they get into marriage advice and other types of things. So I think that might be a concern to some people that the therapy is related to the actual injury at work. So is there any kind of guideline or just checks and balances that people use for therapy or kind of that way you manage your claims when you have someone who's treating with PTSD?
Yeah, and like you said, it does vary from person to person. And sometimes those issues do come up because our event triggered things from the past. And unfortunately, in workers' compensation, we take the person as they are. They may have had a past issue that this event triggers, so it does get discussed in therapy. But I think the key is to get them to a clinician that is trained with dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, because then they can give you a treatment plan, they can keep them on point, they can keep things moving and dealing with what is our issue. And if you do see things in the notes occasionally, like they talked about their childhood being with an abusive father, okay, that may have triggered because of this, but that shouldn't be what the entire session or the entire treatment is about.
Great, thank you. I think outlining the treatment plan is a great way to keep the claim moving forward towards resolution. Great advice.
Right. When we're talking about an injured employee, a lot of times there's the triage, right? So if it's somebody that was injured and there's a flesh wound, let's say, we're responding to that immediately. The psychological component, the PTSD, may take time to develop. And a lot of times what we see on the claim side is, you know, especially on the excess side, we see the employer like, well, that was 3 months ago or that was 6 months ago. Like, why are we talking about this now? And is there a time window where you would say the diagnosis is most appropriate to occur within this certain time from the date of injury?
Most providers don't use the diagnosis PTSD till usually 3 months out. People will be in treatment and maybe receiving some type of therapy or something prior to then. But to really have a solid PTSD diagnosis, It really should be at least 3 months out. If somebody's telling you a week after the incident that this person has PTSD, that may be a red flag that you may want to consider. This might not be the appropriate provider, and they may not have the experience needed to treat this type of injury.
And unfortunately, you know, we're in a state where you can direct medical care. That's going to vary from state to state. Dan spoke to claims a little bit in an investigation in a previous episode that I recommend, if you haven't heard, you know, go back and listen to the investigation episode that Dan Dalton had. You know, we're talking at a high level. Nothing we're saying here is advice to go, you know, assign a clinician to every one of your claims. Nothing's particularly suggesting that. We're just saying it's good to have that dialogue. It's good to engage the appropriate level of clinician. And where you can direct that treatment, get them to the best clinician possible versus avoiding the diagnosis and trying to, quote unquote, keep psych out of the claim. I think an attitude in workers' comp, we probably should shift our thought on and really address from the get-go and really take that by the tail and be more aggressive towards that. I think we see that as an excess carrier, that you're more successful when you do it upfront than being an ostrich and putting your head in the sand and trying to ignore that that exists. So yeah, thanks for that clarification and recommending, you know, getting the appropriate level of clinician involved.
And a lot of times they'll start showing signs of something going on, especially in the more severe injuries or the more severe traumas when they're in the hospital. They'll be mentioning in the notes that they seem anxious or they're voicing concerns or they're having startles or something like that. So that's kind of a trigger too that, okay, if they're in the hospital and the hospital's noticing this and recommending a possible psych consult or that there may be something going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you both made some great points about having the specialist, just like we wouldn't have a specialist if we have surgery. The same thing goes on the post-traumatic stress disorder, someone who's dealt with this before and knows the effective treatment methods on it. The other side of it is, if someone is involved in any kind of workplace violence, there's going to be some residual. I mean, I think I would say probably close to 100% are going to have some kind of anxiety post-traumatic event like that. The problem is that sometimes it doesn't resolve on its own. And that's what you were kind of saying with the three-month window, is if they can't cope with it or didn't develop their own coping skills to deal with it, and does morph into something a little bit more that needs a little official treatment versus just being able to deal with it and resolving. I mean, that's a big difference. And the last thing we want to do is pull something that could be resolved in 6 months and have it last 6 years. We unfortunately see that in the excess world a little too often. And with the things we see in the news and the workplace violence that's happening between teachers or schools and healthcare, unfortunately, this is a topic that's important to discuss.
We'd like to end each episode by discussing where you've made a positive difference in somebody's life. And I know there's probably hundreds of examples over 25-year career in workers' comp where you've made that positive difference. Can you give one of those examples?
Yeah, I mean, I can use a recent one we've had in our world of an injured worker who was involved in workplace violence. Unfortunately, it was a teacher who was involved in a school shooting, and the shooting actually happened outside her door. She was not injured herself, but she could hear the students, she could hear the gunshots, she could hear everything going on. Luckily, this claim was brought to our attention early. We were able to intervene. She got to the appropriate clinician who did have the training and knowledge of how to deal with this. She was a true post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis. She was in treatment, I would say, roughly about 6 to 9 months. As you know, you would expect, she had more treatment earlier in the claim, and her clinician was able to wean her treatment down as time went on. And by the time the next school year started, she was back in her classroom. They had worked with her to get her back before the end of that school year to just, no one's around, walk in the building, get used to her room, close it up. And over the summer, running into students, different things, but they were able to get her back full duty in her classroom at the start of the next school year, and she's doing very well. She's still back there teaching, no issues.
That's a great example. I mean, really, that's our whole goal, is to have people work towards getting their life back. We have major things they go through at work sometimes, unfortunately, but our goal is to give them the best possible treatment, and they're able to return to that full value in their life.
At MEC Connect, we aim to make a difference in your life. Thank you, Tina, for joining Patty and I today. Please continue to listen to MEC Connect. Stay tuned for future episodes. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us, everyone.